WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In addition to your opportunity to vote for president in this November's election, North Carolina voters will be choosing their next governor. The race pits the Democratic lieutenant governor against the seven-time Charlotte mayor making his second run for the office, and a libertarian. Last week, we spent an entire program talking to former Charlotte Mayor Republican Pat McCrory. Next week, Democratic Lieutenant Governor Walter Dalton is scheduled to be with us. But today, we spend time with the Libertarian candidate. Barbara Howe has run for governor of North Carolina twice before, in 2000 and 2004. She ran for Senate, United States Senate, in 1998, for the U.S. House in 1996, and has made four bids for the North Carolina House. And yet, you may not have heard of her. In fact, she has been excluded from the televised gubernatorial debate. So this may be your only chance to hear her thoughts on where she would take the Tar Heel State. And Barbara Howe joins us now. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. I'm glad to be here.
I ask every candidate running for a major office this question at the top. Why do you want to be governor of North Carolina?
That's a particularly good question for a libertarian, because libertarians believe people own themselves and that they shouldn't have government mandating their lives. And so libertarian candidates frequently have a hard time running for office, because the last thing I want to do is to tell Mike or anybody else out there how to run their lives. I don't believe Pat McCrory, Walter Dalton, or I know what's best for your life. But as a libertarian, I've come to realize that in order to get the kind of government I want, I have to participate in the process. So I tell people I run out of self-defense. I'm trying to achieve a government that protects individual rights, encourages personal responsibility, and otherwise stays out of your life.
If you and others like you, I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the presidential candidate.
Gary Johnson.
And I think I've had him on this program about 4 years ago.
Former Republican governor of New Mexico, okay. Two-term governor of New Mexico.
If you and Gary Johnson and other libertarian candidates here and around the country were to get some political traction and have impact on the government as a result, how would it change? What would it look like? How would we as citizens notice the difference?
Well, I keep telling people that a party, any party, doesn't have to win an election to influence the debate and the outcome of public policy. We just have to participate, keep the ideas out there, and be a strong voice for an alternative message. Libertarians are fiscally responsible and socially tolerant.
Your slogan.
That's our slogan. If you look at it historically, people think of Republicans as fiscally responsible. Well, they don't evidence that in their actions frequently, but that's their typical MO. And Democrats are considered socially tolerant. They don't exercise that very well either. But so libertarians take the best of those two parties and combine it into one option. We believe people own their own lives. You shouldn't be told how to educate your children, plan for your retirement, buy your health care, whom you can marry, all those things. As long as you're not hurting other people, you should be left free to live your life as you see fit.
We'll talk more about that as we go through this hour. Most voters, particularly in Charlotte, know about Pat McCrory because he was the seven-time mayor here. He served for 14 years, and he was on city council before that. Some voters know, know about the lieutenant governor, Walter Dalton, because the lieutenant governor is pretty much in the shadow of the governor in North Carolina. They may not know anything about you, so tell us a little bit about Barbara Howe.
Okay, great. I grew up right down the road from Charlotte. I grew up in the little town of Wingate, North Carolina. My father was a businessman. He owned a small woodworking manufacturing plant. My mother ran a women's dress clothing store. I was the youngest of five kids. Grew up in Wingate. I can remember when coming to Charlotte, the first thing you saw was the Coliseum on Independence Boulevard. So Charlotte's gotten a lot bigger then. I went to Pfeiffer College, graduated with a degree in English and psychology, went to graduate school briefly and met my husband there. So got married in 1976, been married for a long time. We have a family of three children, a son, a daughter, and a son, and they're all adults now. So I've been involved in a couple of big issues in my life. I'm an advocate of homeschooling. I homeschooled my kids. I think parents ought to have choices on how to educate their children. I was deeply involved in a support group called La Leche League, which is a support group for breastfeeding mothers, and have been a leader in that group for 32 years, something like that. And I've been involved in the group for 32 years, been a leader for 28, something like that. Can't do the math. Can't remember that far back. And then, obviously, involved in the Libertarian Party, which I've been involved in since the mid-70s.
What pushed you in that direction, as opposed to toward becoming a card-carrying Republican or a card-carrying Democrat?
Well, when I was growing up in North Carolina, I registered as a Democrat because pretty much in the late 60s, if you didn't register Democrat, you didn't vote because almost everything was decided in the primary. But it's a philosophy that speaks to me. Libertarianism is beyond a political party. It's a philosophy that you don't use coercion against people to achieve things. You can use self-defense, but you don't force people to do things. Even if it's a good idea, you don't force
people
to
do things. Give me an idea of what you're talking about in terms of policy that we as citizens experience now.
Let's talk about charity, welfare.
All right.
You know, welfare's there are people truly out there who need things. But charity at the point of a gun, which is government taking money from taxpayers and distributing it as they see fit, is ineffective and wrong. Private charities do a much better job at meeting the needs of people who are in need.
But are they doing enough? Can they do enough?
Well, they don't do enough now because government has usurped that role. I've walked by people on the street who've seen panhandlers, and the little kid will say to the mom, "Mom, let's help that guy." She says, "Oh, no, honey, the government will take care of them." We've come to assume that the government is going to be that safety net, so we don't have as much personal generosity. I think we would have more if government wasn't in the picture.
What about health care? We now have this health care plan that is beginning to unfold unless it's stopped by President Romney. What about that? Is that coercive?
It is coercive. People have come to view health care as a right. It's a right for you to seek out health care, but it, like all other things in our society, is a product. It's a consumer product. A person goes to study medicine at a medical school and learns to be your doctor, and so it makes sense for you to pay him for that service.
And I know you're not running for president, so
right.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because this is going to be beyond the purview of the governor. But a television set is a consumer product, but you
Correct.
Will not die if you don't own
right.
a television
That's
set.
That's true.
If you don't get an appendectomy when you need one, you will die.
Right.
If you don't have adequate coverage, if you come down with cancer, you will die.
I understand that.
And if you don't have health care because you can't afford it or your employer doesn't provide it or you don't have a job, et cetera, then we end up paying for it anyway because you go to the emergency room and get bad care.
Well, there's a lot of that. But the main premise is you do not have a right to something someone else has to provide for you. This is where we're having problems. We have the semantic problem of what is a right. You have the right to life, liberty, and property. But you don't have the right for anybody to give those things to you. You have them as a function of being a human being.
So what happens to people who fall through? If there is no social safety net, be it welfare, it's all provided by churches and private individuals at their largesse, and there is no right or social safety net for health care. What happens if you get into trouble and there's nobody there to help you? You let them sit by the side of the road?
My problem with the social safety net is that it's become a dependence web. It traps people into dependence and that sort of thing. I think we have a generous nation. I think that in the long run, if we had individuals acting voluntarily, we would meet most of the needs of people who are trapped in these circumstances. Will we meet all the needs? No. Do we meet all the needs now? No. But what we do have is a government inefficiency where private charity, I've heard the numbers, I can't verify them, but I've heard like 75 cents of every dollar of government charity goes to government and only 25 cents goes to the people who it helps. On the reverse of private charities, it's just totally the reverse. 25 cents goes to the management and 75 cents go to the people that actually need it. Now, that's a ballpark figure. Don't quote me on that. I haven't verified it, but I do suspect that it's accurate because people in their own generosity do much better at deciding how to do things.
Barbara Howe is the Libertarian candidate, third time Libertarian candidate for North Carolina governor. She's our guest here on Charlotte Talks here on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Blumenthal Performing Arts presenting Mandy Patinkin, Dress Casual, October 28th in Belk Theater, a Tony and Emmy Award-winning actor, singer, and storyteller live in concert. Tickets at 704-372-1000 and by The Garage Door Guru, providing local comprehensive garage door service for over 12 years, including detailed repairs and door installations, offering fine German-made garage doors. Details, go garagedoorguru.com.
More with gubernatorial candidate Barbara Howe in just a moment, but first I want to encourage you to support WFAE and Charlotte Talks, especially if you've never given to the station before. Every day we bring you in-depth coverage that explores a variety of perspectives. Your tax-deductible contribution today will help us continue to keep you informed. Call 704-549-9000 or give online at WFAE.org. Thanks.
This is the WFAE Fall Pledge Drive. I'm Michael Tomczyk, and as Mike Collins just said, we are committed to bringing you the best local journalism. You hear these great interviews like Mike's doing this morning with Libertarian candidate Barbara Howe. He's also had Republican candidate Pat McCrory on, and we're trying to get the Democratic candidate on as well. That type of local coverage, that type of coverage you need is part of our mission here at WFAE, and we've also added two additional reporters to our news team to provide more coverage of local issues. I'm one of them. We've added local newscasts throughout the day, Monday through Friday. We produced over two hours of original local content during the week of the Democratic National Convention. And we ask you to help us continue to improve and do better for you. Support WFAE with your contribution. You can call 704-549-9000 or go online at WFAE.org. Joining me is Catherine Little. Good morning, Catherine. And also, she has more detail about the contest we've just started, a trip to Napa Valley.
A great trip for everyone who calls with their pledge, although a pledge is not necessary. We hope you'll make one. This trip gives away, will offer its winner a round-trip airfare for two persons from Charlotte, a five-night stay at a four-star hotel, ground transportation, and dinner on the famous wine train. So when you make your pledge, or you phone in, or you go online to WFAE.org, your name goes into the hopper. This contest will run through Thursday at 7 p.m., and you just may be the lucky winner. The number again to call, 704-549-9000. It takes only a few minutes. Make your contribution online at WFAE.org.
Listener contributions are the cornerstone of WFAE's operation. Every day, WFAE and national hosts, reporters, and producers go to work knowing that they have to answer to you, not a Wall Street or Capitol Hill, and that means you get honest and accurate information. Call now with your gift to keep quality programming on WFAE. The number again is 704-549-9000.
Think about when it comes to banking, you're paying bills and buying things you want and that you need. Well, some people tend to prefer human contact. Others want to interact with their PC. And this is the same when you're making your contribution at WFAE. Choose a method that's easy, that you prefer. It's only going to take you a moment or two, and you can make your contribution securely to WFAE. Keep us on the air for another year. Go to WFAE.org or call 704-549-9000. You will be saying loud and clear that you support WFAE.
there's a fine line between telling what you should know and telling what you should think. And our job at WFAE as a news source is to give you accurate, timely information that lets you make decisions. Especially here in the news department, that's the entire focus of what we bring to you every single day. WFAE's job is to bring you commentary also that informs and enlightens, and it's to let you hear numerous viewpoints that widen your scope. It's to give you and your fellow listeners a place to air opinions and ask the experts. We're trying our best to accomplish our mission here, and we can only do it with your help. Call 704-549-9000 with your pledge of support, or contribute online at WFAE.org.
Again, just a dollar or two a week will help pay for the news you use. Make the call, 704-549-9000, or make a secure pledge online at WFAE.org. And thanks to all who have already pledged their support. We're now on day three of our fund drive.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Today we are continuing our series of conversations with the people running for governor in North Carolina. Last week it was seven-time Charlotte Mayor Pat McCrory. Next week it will be Lieutenant Governor Walter Dalton. Today, the Libertarian candidate for governor, Barbara Howe, who has run twice before in 2000 and 2004, as well as for other offices, always as a Libertarian. You know that the deck is stacked against you as when you run as a Libertarian, because this is a very strong two-party country, and it's almost impossible to break that. So are there other, knowing that about what you face, are there other reasons that you continue to run, period, and that you continue to run as a Libertarian? Do you have other things that you want to accomplish?
Well, in this so-called two-party system, I'm doing air quotes on the radio, people, in this so-called two-party system, There's no rule what the two parties have to be. I mean, that has changed in our history. Not recently, but in our history. So hopefully we'll build the Libertarian Party as the other option rather than either the Republicans or the Democrats. I don't know which one we would replace, but, replacing one of them would make me perfectly happy. But in the interim, additional parties keep the debate open, because otherwise the two top parties start sounding like this two heads of the same monster, which they're actually doing that now. Republicans don't do a whole lot about reducing spending. They talk big about reducing spending. Democrats don't do a lot about civil liberties and social tolerance.
They don't?
Obama's deported more illegals than any president in our history.
But he ended at Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He's come out in favor of marriage.
He came out in favor of marriage a week after our election. I shredded my marriage license on the step of the General Assembly after Amendment 1 passed. Mm-hmm. he's come down on medical marijuana users. He's done a whole lot of things that socially tolerant people wouldn't do.
You are on the ballot?
I am on the
ballot. All 100 counties?
All 100 counties.
Your name is printed on the ballot with McCrory and Dalton,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
You have been excluded, however, from the televised gubernatorial debates. Why?
Well, I wish they would explain it to me with better satisfaction.
And who makes that decision?
Well, the sponsors do.
The
North Carolina Association of Broadcasters.
And I'm not a member of the North Carolina Association of Broadcasters, but I will apologize on behalf of broadcasters everywhere, because
they sponsored the first two. They sponsored the one that was held a couple weeks ago and the one that's going to be held tonight. And then the Rocky Mount Chamber of Commerce and a college over in Rocky Mount and WRAL, mm-hmm. I think, are the sponsors of the third one that's a couple of weeks from now. Now, their claim now is that a candidate has to be polling at 10%. Mm-hmm. Now, when I ran in 2004 and was excluded from the debates, they were claiming that the candidate had to be polling at 5%. At that time, in 2004, I was polling 2 or 3%. Now, in 2012, I've been polling between 6 and 9% very consistently early in the game. So the number all of a sudden mysteriously rose to 10%. Mm-hmm. Regardless of their parameters, that 10% number is ridiculous. It is so incredibly difficult to get on the ballot in North Carolina. We are the third most difficult state in the nation to get on the ballot. To get on in 2008, it took the Libertarian Party 3.5 years of petitioning, spent about $130,000 in real dollars and then countless dollars in volunteer time and effort to get on the ballot to achieve a spot at the table. So just by crossing that hurdle, people ought to be included in the debates because it's a disservice to the voters of North Carolina.
I don't give my opinion very often on this program. It just seems to me that if you're on the ballot, you're a legitimate candidate and you ought to be part of the debates and you ought to challenge the licenses of the stations that don't carry your...
We did that 1 year and got no response from the FCC.
I bet you didn't.
So it's expensive to challenge these things.
Right. Have you been able to appear at any function with either Mr. Dalton or Mr. McCrory or with both?
Mr. McCrory and I were at Mule Days together in Benson, so that was fun.
But we didn't speak.
We were just at the function together.
All right, let's talk about some of the things that are important to you and that you're running on. You say that you want the voters to be in charge of their lives, their children's educations, and their income, and that governments are instituted to defend citizens' rights, not to limit them. Is that what the government in Raleigh has been doing over time, limiting rights?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, we have a one-size-fits-all monopoly public school system where you pretty much, unless you're willing to pay twice and able to pay twice, you have to send your kids to the government schools or else. Or you have to pay twice, like I did when I homeschooled my kids.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to public school?
I did. I went to public school, and I have – there are great public schools out there. There are great teachers out there, but there are also – bad ones, and there are also parents out there who want alternatives. I've got three kids. They all learned very differently. They would have been miserable in a government school. I've got a kid that his basic MO was to walk around the furniture while he was learning things.
Is government school what's the word, a buzzword, or is that just an alternative to public school?
You can call it a buzzword if you want to. All schools are public schools, even those private schools, they're open to the public. So I use government schools.
Although there are some ways you can't get in.
But that could be true. I don't know enough about all of them, but most of them accept members of the public.
But do you believe that there should be a public school system?
I would prefer education be handled by parents and not by people in Raleigh and Washington.
And when you say handled by parents, you want everybody to homeschool their children?
No, I want every parent to have the option to send their kids to the school of their choice. And what I'm promoting in North Carolina is tuition tax credits for people to establish scholarships.
So if you had your way in the best of all possible worlds, would you end the public school system? Because you have to fund it if you're going to have it.
In the best of all possible worlds, yes, I would separate school and government.
And government. But the public school system, it seems to me, up through the 1970s, served us well. And particularly in North Carolina, it seems that moved kids into one of the best college systems mm-hmm. in the nation, which is also fundamentally a public college system. It worked. Why would anybody be against it?
The history of public schooling is complex. John Taylor Gatto, who was the New York Teacher of the Year, wrote a great expose on the history of the underground history of government public schooling. I can't remember the exact title of the book, but when you get government in charge of the means of education, like getting them in charge of the means of production, you get centralized bureaucracies trying to control the curriculum, the agenda, and you don't get as many options
but
for parents.
But shouldn't there be some sort of requirement that says at the end of the third grade, children should know this and be able to accomplish this? They should read at a certain level. They should know math at a certain level. At the end of the seventh grade, similar goals. And shouldn't I, as a student or a parent of a student in the seventh grade in North Carolina, be able to take my child and move across the country to Nevada and put them in a school and realize that they're in the right place, they're still in the seventh grade, they still know what the other students know? Without that centralized control, wouldn't we have students everywhere in every school in the country at a different place at the same time?
We have that now, even though we have those standard curriculums. And kids don't learn at the same rate and at the same pace. They just don't. My first son didn't start reading until he was about 11 years old.
Really?
He was
Now, he's homeschooled, right?
He's homeschooled.
So you're to blame for this.
Yes, I'm definitely to blame. No, I did my part. I read, and I went to all the dyslexia conferences and all sorts of things. So, but he finally started reading. So, he would have been miserable in government school. I'm convinced.
And you're obviously a pretty smart woman. You have a degree in psychology. You have a degree in English. And evidently, you had the time to educate three children at home. Many parents don't have that luxury and don't have the capacity to do that. And many parents, it would seem to me, that because part of the problem in the public schools today, and I've done a lot of conversations on this, many of the problems stem from lack of parental involvement in their children's lives, much less their children's education. So when you take away the safety net of public education and you say, okay, parents, it's on you to get your kids educated. You have a choice. You can do whatever you want, but it's you.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you condemning a lot of kids
You're making an assumption. I think that makes the assumption that parents don't care that their kids are educated.
Some of them don't.
Maybe a few of them don't, and that's possible.
Or some of them don't understand what it takes to get them educated.
Some of them don't care, and they're not getting educated in public schools either. But where was I going with this? I can't remember.
Well, I was just saying that aren't you condemning a lot of kids to no education or bad education because their parents either don't care or don't have the capacity to make those decisions?
I think most parents do have the capacity to make those decisions, and I think if we encourage them to make that decision by not giving them only one option, that they will make the best choices for their children.
So you advocate a tuition tax credit scholarship program for students. How would that be different from what we know as a voucher system?
Well, a voucher is more like a food stamp program. The government writes you a check and says, here, go spend this where you want to. The taxpayer choice scholarship plan is giving the taxpayer, him or herself, the option to direct their tax dollars. You're already being taxed for government education anyway. So if you can direct that dollar to a child, it could be your child. If you don't have children, you could direct a scholarship to the neighbor down the street, your niece in another town. A company could establish scholarships as a benefit of employment. A church could pull their tax liability to fund scholarships for kids in their churches.
And what about people who don't have children or whose children, such as yourself, are grown and no longer have kids in the schools? Should they continue to support education for all those other children?
Well, this is what they're doing now. I'm paying taxes. I never used the government schools, and I no longer have need of them for my children. But I'm still paying taxes.
Yeah, but we also pay taxes on roads and things like that we never drive on.
I could direct my tax dollars to a specific thing. Mm-hmm. In North Carolina right now, we have a checkoff for political party funding. You can direct $3 to either the Republicans, Democrats, or Libertarians, or other. Okay. So I would love to see on our tax form a checkoff box for, I'd like my taxes to go to education.
But again, we don't need political parties.
That's true.
And if we support them, it's out of our own decision, we do need an educated populace to run this country and to be competitive in the world.
Well, I would say if we had that option of checking off, education would probably be the number one tick.
I want to provide people the opportunity to ask their own questions of Barbara Howe here. So our numbers are 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE. And people have already been corresponding with us online.
Let me have it.
At WFAE.org. / Charlotte Talks. Caitlin on Facebook said, I would love to hear what she would do, if anything, to legalize certified midwives in North Carolina. I had my baby in South Carolina with the help of, I'll mention her name because she was on, Damaris Pittman, who was on the show a while back, because I couldn't have him at home with a midwife. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about that?
Well, I had all three of my babies at home. Only one of them I had in North Carolina, and I had a lay midwife who was totally out of the mainstream and probably wasn't supposed to be there, so I won't tell you who she was.
And why did you do it that way?
Well, I felt like home is the best place to give birth, in my opinion. Hospitals are for sick people. So, not that some hospitals don't do a great job. They're birthing centers, and hospitals have tried to address the needs of those who want a more homey birth experience, but you should be able to have the option to have your baby where you want to. And the effort for certified nurse midwives, I'm not a big fan of licensing and regulation. I think licenses and regulations are efforts for professions to keep out competition. But I understand where the certified nurse midwives are coming from, because they want to achieve this in order so they can practice their art without the fear of going to jail. So I have supported them. I've gone to some of the rallies down in Raleigh for nurse midwife bill, because I believe you ought to be able to choose where you have your baby and be able to have somebody there with you that you trust and respect.
One of the things that you do advocate is ending burdensome regulations, what you call burdensome regulations,
yes,
on business, and reducing licensing requirements that stifle entrepreneurship. What regulations do you view as burdensome?
Most of them. There are 700 licenses that are required for different occupations in North Carolina. And as I mentioned with the certified, when I was talking about the midwives, most of those licenses are done under the auspices of saying we're ensuring quality and we're ensuring uniformity. But what really happens is that they're trying to keep out competition.
Barbara Howe is our guest, Libertarian candidate for North Carolina governor on WFAE Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Christmas Made in the South, a fine arts and crafts festival featuring the works of over 300 artists and master craftsmen. Cabarrus Arena, Friday through Sunday, madeinthesouthshows.com. And also by Charlotte Latin School, with an admissions open house for all grades, Thursday at 9:30 a.m. Financial assistance is available. Details and registration at 704-846-7207.
In a few minutes, we'll continue our conversation with Libertarian gubernatorial candidate Barbara Howe. But right now, I want to remind you that it's fundraising time at WFAE. You rely on the station for thoughtful, engaging discussions throughout the year, and we rely on listener support to keep the service on the air. So please do your part now. Call 704-549-9000 or give online at WFAE.org. Thanks.
And thank you, Mike Collins. I'm Michael Tomzik, and we just want to remind you, WFAE relies on contributions from listeners like you to pay for the content you enjoy from programs offered through NPR, American Public Radio, and PRI, like Charlotte Talks, which you're listening to right now. During this pledge drive, we're asking you to help pay for the programming that enriches your life by becoming a contributor to WFAE. $25, $50, $100, whatever you can give will make a difference for us. Call 704-549-9000. You can also give online at WFAE.org. And joining me is Catherine Little. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Michael. Keeping you connected to what's going on in the world has never been more important or more costly. Your support ensures that we can continue bringing you the in-depth reporting and the analysis you have come to expect from WFAE and NPR. Please call now with your contribution, 704-549-9000. You can also give securely online at WFAE.org.
Looking for a great vacation getaway with beaches and surf, mountains and redwoods, the lush beauty of vineyards, and a dazzling selection of award-winning wineries and restaurants? Well, call 704-549-9000 or go to WFAE.org and you can enter. Airfare for two and accommodations for 5 days and nights. Complete this wine country package. No contribution is necessary. However, we do hope you'll consider making a pledge. Good luck and thanks for your support.
As Tina just said, we have that great trip coming up to Napa Valley, and at its best and most distinct, NPR's election coverage is described by listeners as fact-based, fair, no hype, smart, reasoned, and focused on implications from reporters who are knowledgeable and experienced. And you're hearing some of that election coverage right now on Charlotte Talks with the interview with Libertarian candidate Barbara Howe. You hear these reporters and this coverage on WFAE thanks to the financial support of our contributing listeners. And this is why your support is so important right now. Please give as generously as you can to maintain the reporting and analysis you value. Call 704-549-9000 or give online at WFAE.org.
This is the third day of WFAE's fall membership drive. You helped us buy back 5 days. And now we've come to the part of the fund drive where we ask you to act. So it's time for you to decide yes or no. now or later. If the answer is yes and right now, here's what you do. Call 704-549-9000 and make your contribution. It takes a few minutes, or if you like, go online to WFAE.org. You may contribute there. Either way, you're doing your part. We want to say thanks to everyone who has already pledged their support this morning. We're going to be going back to Charlotte Talks shortly. You still have time to make your pledge. Your name will go into the hopper. Potentially, you might win that trip to Napa Valley.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Next week, it's Lieutenant Governor Walter Dalton. Last week, it was Pat McCrory, who's the Republican running for governor. Today, the Libertarian running for governor, Barbara Howe. You will not see her on the you won't see her on the presidential debates either, but you won't see her in the gubernatorial debates on television because she has been excluded for reasons that mystify both she and I. I do not understand. She and I, you're an English person. Is that right? It's me and her?
Mr. Vise.
Both me and her? It's object of a preposition?
Her and me.
Her and me, okay. I get nervous when English people are in the room here. Let's talk about some of the other things, and I'll take a phone. Well, let's take a phone call first, and then we'll talk about taxes here. Let's go to Alex in Salisbury. Welcome to the program, Alex.
Yes, thank you. I'm really glad to hear having Barbara on here. Libertarians always, hard to take to get any sort of coverage. And I want to see if Barbara wouldn't mind addressing is I'm real proud about how our state has pushed through the Innocence Commission, and a lot of things along those lines have proven that our legal system, at least for indigent and poor, really don't have really slightest chance in heck of getting through anything. And I was wondering if she might address potentially, if she was able to get elected governor, any judicial reforms, public defender, or something along that line?
A good question. One of the first things I would do when elected governor would be immediately commute all death sentences to life in prison without parole. I don't believe
that's something a governor can do?
For state crimes, yes. Okay. I can't do it for federal crimes, but I can do it for state crimes. I do not think government should be killing prisoners. I agree there are perfectly heinous people out there, and if you've got the means and ability to defend yourself against them, I'm all for even deadly force in the use of self-defense. But once you have a person in your control, there's no justification of killing him. And we make so many mistakes in our judicial system in any state, North Carolina is no exception there, that I cringe at the thought of killing somebody who didn't deserve it.
So wrongs don't make a right.
Right. So I'm that's one of the first things I would do as governor. We need to evaluate our judicial system. For one thing, we have too many laws. The drug war is one that's just really filled our prisons, ruined lives, filled the political system and the legal system with corruption. So we need to readdress how we deal with the drug war.
Is that something a governor can do? Can you take it upon yourself to just simply not enforce those laws?
I could encourage the General Assembly to change some of the laws in North Carolina.
Could you order the law enforcement not to enforce them?
I do not know.
Okay.
I would like to find out.
Because some governors are taking federal law into their own hands out west. So, I mean, that's another federal law that you could challenge, I suppose. Does that answer your question, Alex?
Oh, yeah. That's great. I just wanted to make sure that issue gets addressed. Just
yes.
On here, if nothing
okay.
else.
Thanks for your call. Dirk on Facebook asks, what does North Carolina need to do to prepare for the possibility of the financial collapse of the federal government? An optimist in our midst.
Yes.
I don't know that
stock
you can
up,
prepare.
Stock up on ammunition, I suppose, foodstuffs that will last for 7 years. I mean... There are those who are in that boat saying, we've got to prepare for the financial collapse, buy gold and silver. Those are strategies that people are taking. I'm not quite there yet myself, but I do have concerns that we are heading that direction.
Well,
elect Gary Johnson as next president of the United States.
And what would he do?
He would cut the federal government's budget by 43% right away. He would end the wars in foreign nations right away.
And we'd never go to war again?
We would only go to war in defense of this country, not in defense of other countries.
Well, aside from the fact that that we were told there were weapons of mass destruction, we did go into Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden.
And that's done now.
Was that the defense of the country? Would you regard that as being in the defense of the country?
I think at the time after 9/11 happened, there was a response that was necessary. Okay. But I think the response...
Let's get back to North Carolina here.
We've gone beyond that, yes.
Okay. What... You advocate lower taxes.
Absolutely.
Corporate level and individual level. Mm-hmm. What should the corporate tax rate in North Carolina be? What should the individual tax rate be?
I can't give a number to that. And corporations really don't pay taxes. They incorporate those taxes into the price of their products. So ideally, the tax has got to be as close to zero as possible. Government does too many things. If we cut the size and scope of government, we won't need nearly as much revenue.
But we're mandated to bring some revenue to the federal government. We're mandated to carry out certain federal programs at the state level. All states are.
The federal government does like to hold states hostage, and I would do everything I could to examine all those things that we could possibly try to get out of, and these unfunded mandates that the federal government puts on us, I'd like to see them go.
Mm-hmm. North Carolina and other states offer incentives to companies who will relocate here and who promise jobs. You talk mm-hmm. about getting out of the way of creating jobs, but do you want to end these incentives?
Absolutely.
How can we compete?
As my friend Mike Munger, who ran in 2008, says, if they'll come for money, they'll leave for money. The way to get companies to North Carolina is through reduced regulation, a nice bare minimum regulatory system, good solid infrastructure, use all those road fees and car taxes and stuff to maintain the roads we have, not build a road to nowhere where we
have we done that?
Have you been out the interstate to the Outer Banks? The traffic on it's like...
There is no interstate in the Outer Banks. That's
why. Not the interstate. The
but that's
264.
Why.
I mean...
Because we have miserable roads in North Carolina. Yeah. When you compare us to South Carolina, we have miserable roads.
The roads I've been traveling on, and I've traveled through every county in the state, they've all been in pretty good shape. So,
have you driven 77 south from Huntersville in the morning?
No.
Have you driven 485 in the afternoon going back to Ballantyne?
No, I haven't. Those are federal highways, aren't they? Anyway, have a good education system. I'm talking about getting jobs here. Mm-hmm. Have a good education system, low taxes, low regulation, and companies will flock here.
But why would they flock here if Virginia, South Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia – are offering incentives?
Because we're going to have lower taxes and a better workforce and a more solid infrastructure, and they'll be happy to come do business here.
We have those things now. Not the lower taxes, but do we have the better workforce and the solid infrastructure now?
Well, when we have my choice education, we'll have a better educated workforce.
You agree with Pat McCrory when he says North Carolina's brand is being diminished by high taxes, excessive regulation, and broken state government. I take you agree with that.
I would agree with that statement.
What is broken about the state government?
Well, too many decisions are in the hands of politicians. The whole issue about tax incentives, you've got politicians and bureaucrats in Raleigh deciding what businesses they think will succeed or fail. That's not how the market works. The market works by a company coming in here and providing a product and consumers buying it so that the company succeeds or fails on its own merits, not on the hopes and wishes of politicians.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Dennis. Dennis in Mooresville. Welcome to the program, Dennis.
Good morning, Michael. I'm certainly sympathetic to Ms. Howell's proposals of drastically cutting the budget, and she said if the national candidate for president were to get in, he said he would cut the federal budget by 43%. But what I'd like to know is what Ms. Howell would do in North Carolina, and what the national candidate would do with all those unemployed government workers. If unemployment's the problem, and we turn out 10,000 or 15,000 state employees in North Carolina, turn them out on the street, what's going to happen to the unemployment number?
Well, I certainly don't expect all those jobs to disappear immediately. I expect most of them to go away through attrition, people leaving the jobs, just not replacing them, that sort of thing.
But if you were to end public education in the state, for instance, you all those.
I'm not ending education. I'm ending government education.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yes,
all those jobs.
There are going to be thousands of schools opening up when the parents have the dollars to send their kids to the schools they want to. There'll be a small school on every street corner, possibly, because there'll be a market for it, because we got kids and parents wanting their kids to have education. So I don't see a need for teachers going away. It's just the delivery system that I see changing.
Answer your question, Dennis?
That does, but remember, Ms. Howe, the governor in North Carolina is pretty much powerless.
I agree. I just get to use the office as a bully pulpit and try to encourage the General Assembly to do the right thing.
All right, thanks very much.
Thanks for your call. You know, you sound like a Republican on most of the issues that we've spoken of, perhaps a Republican that's a little more adamant about certain things than Republicans are.
I've been accused of being more Republican than Republicans.
Right, but you don't sound like a Republican when you say that you advocate repealing the marriage amendment. You say constitutions exist to limit government, not people.
Correct.
Did you campaign against the marriage amendment last election cycle?
I did.
Why do you think the voters said yes to it, and how would you convince them to say no to it, to reverse themselves on it?
I don't know why the voters said yes to it. I suspect that some of them misunderstood the unintended consequences of the marriage amendment. Some are just plain against it, period. And we already have a law in North Carolina that says same-sex couples can't get married. Mm-hmm. We did not need to codify it into our Constitution. And I will repeat that. The Constitution is to limit government, not to limit individuals. We have placed discrimination in the North Carolina Constitution, and I think that's an abomination.
Okay. Should churches pay taxes?
Well, see, as a libertarian, I don't think anybody should be paying taxes. So churches would be no different. I do approve of the separation of church and state. Government shouldn't be influencing your religion. So
should religion be influencing your vote in the ballot box?
That's an interesting question.
Because there was that moment this campaign season when preachers from around the country mm-hmm. decided they were going to flout or go in the face of constitutional prohibition of that mm-hmm. and tell people in their congregations how they should vote.
You get information about whom to vote for from all different avenues of your life, and I can't see as restricting churches from offering some of that information
as
well.
But if there's a separation of church and state
mm-hmm. –
and that is meant to be to give you the free exercise of religion, should religion be involved in politics if they don't pay taxes?
That's a good question, and I don't have,
you don't have
the
an answer for that.
Appropriate answer.
Despite being excluded from the televised debates, you recorded a YouTube video with your answers to mm-hmm. some of the questions Mr. McCrory and Mr. Dalton were asked about energy and development. You say that you favor allowing companies to explore, but you do not favor offering any incentives for them to do so, and you favor environmental protection for property being explored. That sounds like a combination of Democrat and Republican mm-hmm. talking points. In a world where these two parties can't agree on anything, left because of the left-right split, at least on this issue, you put them together. So does that put you in a good position, a better position, or a politically untenable one?
I think it puts me in a better position. I don't think any political party deals with the issue of the environment 100% great. I think libertarians take the view of protection of property rights. If you pollute the air and the water, mm-hmm. you are trespassing against my right to clean air and clean water. So a lot of this will have to play out in the courts. People have to be responsible for what they do, and companies have to bear the cost of all those problems.
Barbara Howe is running for North Carolina governor as a libertarian, our guest here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Parsec Financial, wealth management for individuals, businesses, and trust services. Details at parsecfinancial.com or by phone at 704-334-0894. And by Opera Carolina, performing Puccini's Tosca Thursday and Sunday at the Belk Theater. For more info, 704-372-1000 or operacarolina.org.
We're in the middle of our fall pledge drive, and I hope you're going to make your pledge this morning. We count on listener contributions to pay for just about everything you hear on 90.7 WFAE. Your gift right now keeps the conversations on Charlotte Talks coming your way for another year. Join us with a financial pledge to 704-549-9000 or give online at WFAE.org. Thank you.
I'm Michael Tomczyk, and this is the WFAE Fall Pledge Drive. We're here today to raise money to pay for the quality programming you've come to expect on WFAE. That includes Charlotte Talks, which you're listening to right now, and due to our coverage of the presidential debate tonight, you will be able to hear that tonight on WFAE. But because of that, we will re-air gubernatorial libertarian candidate Barbara Howe's interview with Mike Collins on Charlotte Talks in its entirety tomorrow night at 9 o'clock instead of tonight. Charlotte Talks has also already had on Republican candidate Pat McCrory, and they will have Democratic candidate Walter Dalton on October 24th. So this station is giving you all of the coverage you need to be informed about the governor's race, the national race. All of the important elections to you are things that we are covering, and we are trying to give you as much information about as possible. But our ability to do this depends on you. You can become a special part of this public radio community by making a financial contribution now by calling 704-549-9000 or pledging online at WFAE.org. Joining me now is Catherine Little. Hey, Catherine.
Good morning. Public radio is listener-funded radio. Today, listener support is the single largest source of WFAE's operating funds. So please help keep WFAE your trusted source for news and intelligent conversation for programs like Charlotte Talks by calling with your contribution at 704-549-9000 or make a pledge securely online at WFAE.org.
There are a lot of sources for news. We've got broadcast TV, cable TV, local and national newspapers, news magazines. With so many to choose from, we're really proud that WFAE is still high on your list. You've found that WFAE provides dependable, high-quality coverage of local, national, and international stories. We provide them each